Klobuchar?
I just want to say there's three women up here that have fought pretty hard for a woman's right to choose. I'll start with that. And then I just want to make very clear, I think we share the goal of universal health care. And the idea I put out there, the public option, which the governor was just talking about, this idea is that you use Medicare or Medicaid without any insurance companies involved. You could do it either way. And the estimates are 13 million people would see a reduction in their premiums. 12 more million people would get covered. So I think it is a beginning, and the way you start and the way you move to universal health care.
Three of your Thursday edition of Justice and Drew continues on 651-989-5855 is the phone number. #250 and saying TCNT also works as well. And the hashtag TCNT on Twitter. You want to comment if you watched the debate last night. Let us know who you think won. If it's anyone other than Donald Trump, you're probably wrong.
Yeah, Trump's definitely the real winner here.
A little bit, a couple things, programming notes a little bit later on in the hour. We do have some amazing piece of audio. You can see the video, too. The video works really well, but it's a sort of before and after of Democrats talking about the border crisis. They're so hypocritical, and they just refuse to go and admit it. Plus, local news, St. Louis Park's pledging to drop the, or they've voted to drop the Pledge of Allegiance. We'll dive into that. Right now, though, very pleased to welcome to the show and curious to get her take on what took place last night, Minnesota GOP Chairwoman Jennifer Carnahan. Now, did you watch, or have you just been getting fully sort of recapped because of our extensive and well-produced coverage on Justice and Drew this morning?
Well, let me say I've been getting recapped because of your extensive review, but I did watch probably 85% of it.
So what are your big takeaways from last night? I mean, other than they're a bunch of buffoons that probably won't be around in 6 months. Either than that, but that's just my thoughts.
You know, my biggest takeaway is how scary all of these candidates are for our country and where they want to take our country. And I was texting with my mom, and I was saying, Mom, are you watching this? And she's like, scary, gross, dangerous. So that's pretty much the sentiment.
I like your mom's hot takes.
Yes, they're very good.
The Minnesota media could not wait, you know, to see Amy Klobuchar up on that stage. Here's her chance. Here's her big moment on the national spotlight. The entire country's going to see what we all love about Amy here in Minnesota, and she's really going to break out. What did you think? How did she do? Did she have any breakout moments in your opinion?
Well, first of all, as I was watching it, there were several long spans of time where she wasn't called on, she didn't speak, and I think I tweeted, is Amy Klobuchar even in this debate still? So that was my first thought. My second one was, you know, Minnesota loves to fawn over their own, but that doesn't mean the rest of the country has interest or pays attention. And frankly, she was just, you know, one attempt. She didn't stand out. You know, I think she had one line where she got applause, but I don't know that the applause was because of her, but more that she was trying to highlight the women that were on the stage.
You know, and it's interesting, too. I was just thinking about it. We had a discussion before we had you on just talking about how the Democrats right now are. They've all put themselves in a very vulnerable position if one of them were to decide to be sort of a liberal version of what Trump was and to call out just all of the pandering and all of the wokeness. It's a very dangerous game to play. They'd have to be really tactful about it. But honestly, a person like Amy Klobuchar, just given our perception of how she really is, I think she could actually do that, but I don't think she ever will. I think she's got a veneer on. I think she has a persona that she's put out there that she's too used to putting up in public. But I think if she were to act more like she acts around her staffers when she's not in the public spotlight, I think she'd actually have a chance to break through. It's just fascinating to me. They're canceling each other out, and none of them are cutting through in any of their commentary or their proposals.
Well, you know, the scary thing is, when I was listening to it, number one, I think the scariest thing is the socialized medicine. You know, I was thinking about this in my head, and I made a tweet about it, but, you know, I have friends that live in Europe. I have my best friend lives in the Netherlands. Another great friend of mine lives in London in the UK. Another good friend of mine lives in Scotland. And the socialized healthcare system over there does not work because they don't have access to the doctors they want. They have to wait in line when something goes wrong. You know, my girlfriend over in the Netherlands, she ended up having a cavity. she had to search for a dentist online, read reviews online, and then wait 2 weeks to get in. And then when she gets in, they don't even give her Novocaine to fill the cavity.
Oh, my God.
And she was complaining about it. And I'm like, well, that's what you get when you want to take out, like, 40% of your paycheck, 30 or 40%, whatever it is, for health care. It's not even good health care. And there's a reason that a lot of those people over there that have the financial means, everyone comes over to Mayo, right? They want to come to U.S.
Sure.
The U.S. for their medical treatment. And to go and say that they want to take away private insurance, that doesn't make any sense, because there's value in being able to choose your doctor, to choose your specialist. Most of, you know, almost all of the companies, if not all, in America offer great health insurance. You know, I used to work for companies like General Mills, McDonald's. I mean, you have great coverage. You have a great network of doctors you can choose from. And to take that away from people and force everyone onto a one-size-fits-all system that, quite frankly, has been proven not to work, it's a gross misinterpretation and narrative that the Democrats are spinning. And I think if any of them were honest, then they should go live in Europe for 1 or 2 years and see what it's like, and yeah, then come back and try to sell socialized medicine to all of us.
I'm telling you, man, going to live in another country for a period of time, not even just healthcare. I mean, so many issues would be discussed in such a different manner if a lot of these people that want to fundamentally transform this country would actually go spend time in other countries and see how they are there. Take your social justice warrior crowd and let them live in other countries for a year or two, and then come back and see just how great and tolerant and wonderful people we are by and large in this country. A lot of things would change altogether. And I think when it comes to the healthcare debate, and you can apply this to this burgeoning debate over free college and canceling student debt, when you stop paying for something yourself, you lose decision-making power. You know, when you decide that you want the government to start paying for your health care, well, guess what? The government's going to get to make decisions when it comes to what type of treatment you get, what that treatment looks like. You're not going to have options on the table, okay? Like you said with your friend and the cavity. You know, there's going to be okay, you've got this thing, and this is how we treat that thing. And if you don't like it, sorry, you don't really have any other options. At least with a private insurance market, yes, costs may sometimes get a little inflated, and there are certain times that you have to kind of step in and slap somebody's wrist who's behaving badly. But at least you have the option of saying, okay, here's my condition. Here are the 4 or 5 different treatment options that my doctor is recommending. And I get to choose. I get to decide which path I want to go down, not some other entity.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think that what the Democrats are trying to do, and this is where it just angers me more than anything, is they're trying to take the framework of healthcare and make it about, oh, Republicans don't believe everyone should have healthcare. And that's not the point, yeah, right? The point is that we have a different approach about it in a system that has worked for our country for, you know, generations. And they're trying to completely turn that system and process on its head. And we've already seen with Obamacare, it doesn't work. Minnesota had, 93% coverage in this state until Obamacare came in. And that's what caused premiums to rise. That's what caused people to drop out of the market. That's what caused people to face all these rising health care bills that they never were faced with before. So they need to be honest about the conversation, and they're not being honest. They try to pitch it in a way that falsely makes people believe something is true when it absolutely is not true.
Well, we just got a couple minutes left. I got one more question for you. I want to give you a chance to comment on all of the swirling controversy around Representative Ilhan Omar. I won't recap everything, but just curious to get your thoughts. Where do you think this goes? Is there going to be any sort of congressional inquiry or investigation? Will Ilhan Omar face any consequences for the things that we know she's done and possibly the things that have alleged been done? Or are we just going to have to wait until the next election cycle?
You know, sadly, I think we're just going to have to wait until the next election cycle. I don't see the Democrats out in Washington or even the Democrats here in Minnesota actually doing what's right and calling her on her, you know, transgressions and, quite frankly, where she's broken the law. You know, because she's a Democrat, she's going to be able to skate by. Our only hope is that voters in the 5th Congressional District will wake up and realize that she is a dangerous person to be representing Minnesota Americans at any level of government, and send her packing, and let's get someone else into that seat.
Minnesota GOP Chairwoman Jennifer Carnahan, thank you so much for coming on the show this morning. Always good to talk to you.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
Thanks. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Let's dive into some more of these clips from last night. This one makes me laugh a bit. It reminds me, and this is kind of a weird example to give, but this reminds me of when you have a lot of money thrown at a school. And you throw that money at a school because it's supposed to go and improve the grades, it's supposed to be better for education, right? Well, how did you go and spend that money? Well, you know, we put in a new basketball court, and we, you know, we drained the pool, put in a new lining, and we gave it a diving board. Well, how's that supposed to help? Well, you know, recruitment and all that, right? This is what this felt like to me when Rachel Maddow decided to throw another question at Amy Klobuchar.
On the issue of civil rights and demographics, honestly, and politics, for decades, the Democratic Party has counted on African-American voter turnout as step one to winning elections on a national level. Democrats are counting on the Latino community now and in the future in the same way. What have you done for Black and Latino voters that should enthuse them about going to the polls for you if you're your party's nominee?
My life and my career and my work in the Senate has been about economic opportunity. And to me, this means better childcare for everyone in this country. And when you want to have an economy that works, you need to have retirement that works. You need to have public schools that work. And you also need to make sure that those communities are able to get those jobs of the future, the STEM jobs. In fact, Donald Trump, one of the first bills that he signed, of the 34 he signed where I was the lead Democrat, okay, that's a first up here, was one that was about that, making sure minority community members could share in those jobs.
Did she just compliment Donald Trump?
I don't know.
It kind of sounds like she did.
I don't know. Her answers are so rambling.
But to my point, my life and career and my work in the Senate has been about economic opportunity. It's that school analogy. It's just like, yeah, you know, because I'm there and I'm talking about bettering people's lives. So that's, you know, about making, you know, the economy better. If I were running the debate, I'd have a buzzer for both left and right, Democrats and Republicans. Have a buzzer every time they're asked a question. They start on the path and then they jump off the path.
Every single answer you'd get.
Exactly.
Yeah. You're off topic. It's an off topic button.
None of these answers and like actually stay on topic.
Yeah. No. You're off topic again. No. Your bike is off the trail. I'm sorry. Your bike back on the trail, please.
And you need a special button for when they just randomly start speaking another language.
just yes.
Because that happened several times too.
So weird. You know somebody when it came to what you were saying, when it came to speaking the other languages, you know they all sat by before they went, you know what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna start going. I'm gonna start speaking Spanish.
Yeah, I'm gonna show them.
Watch this wokeness.
Hey, watch Cory Booker's face when I do this.
So to me, this is about a few things. It's about an African-American woman that goes to a hospital in New Orleans, says her hands are swollen, and then doctor ignores her and her baby dies. It's about the fact that African-American women make 61 cents for every dollar a white man makes. So in short, we need to, one, and I will do this in my first 100 days as president, we will work to make sure everyone can vote at this table. Everyone can vote in this country. We will also go to the next step of criminal justice reform. Senator Booker and I worked on that first step act, but we should go to the second step act, which is to help all our communities across.
Senator, thank you very much.
I don't even know.
The question was, what have you done for Black and Latino voters that should enthuse them about going to the polls for you? Just to remind everybody what the question was, because I don't know if she answered it.
Let's
not sure.
Before we go to
forgot.
She did too.
Before we go to break, let's go ahead and play the moment when God stepped in to offer up some technical difficulties.
What's happening?
We are hearing our colleagues' audio. If the control room could turn off the mics. If the control room could turn off the mics of our previous moderators, we will.
I think it's the prior moderators.
You know, we prepared for everything.
Guess what, guys? We are going to take a quick break. We're going to get this technical situation fixed. We will be right back.
It was just chaos.
Yeah.
Absolute chaos.
This is when the lights went out.
Amy Klobuchar was like, anybody want to borrow one of my binders? Throw it at somebody if you want.
It sounds like somebody needs to be punished. I have extra binders for that.
Use the hashtag TCNT, and if you do that, you search for that, you can find the video when the lights went out and the one, the parody video that Trump made. It's not, it's a visual.
It's, yeah.
Yeah. It would not work on the air. So coming up, let's do this. Run through a couple of headlines because they relate to some local stories that we have before we get to some more debate audio of the problems that they're facing in Seattle, San Francisco, and Los Angeles, and why some of the moves being made, whether it's the Minneapolis City Council or whether it's right here where the station's located at, the council here in St. Louis Park, they're on the slow march towards where San Francisco, Seattle, and San Francisco are in the decisions that they've been
FM.
He has made us less safe than we were when he became president. So what I would do is negotiate us back into that agreement, is stand with our allies and not give unlimited leverage to China.
China.
Doke.
Now everybody pronounces it like that.
Doke.
Welcome back to China's Justice and Drew.
Negotiating with us. What are you talking about?
I know, right? All right, let's do this here on Twin Cities News Talk. Let's run through. We got a smattering of quick clips. So let's run through these clips from last night. If you want to call and comment, 651-989-5855 is the phone number, and we'll start off with Cory Booker from last night talking about corporate consolidation.
I think we have a serious problem in our country with corporate consolidation, and you see the evidence of that in how dignity is being stripped from labor. And we have people that work full-time jobs and still can't make a living wage.
Did all these clips that just divide, divide, and divide. And look, that's not to say that when Trump ran, he didn't do the same thing, right? I get it. This is part of how all this stuff works. But for a party that's been so much, used to be so much about unifying and getting together, it just seems like so many of their comments are just simply, you know, based off of division and people playing the victim and how government's going to come in, rescue them, and save them.
Yeah, I'll never, and this is one of those sort of core worldview things, I'll never understand why there is so much vilification of corporations, vilification of the private sector, villainization of those that are motivated by a profit motive. Because what does it take to get a profit? You have to offer something that people want, and you have to convince them to do business with you. You have to convince them that they're the best value for their dollar. And for some reason, those are all viewed as evil and bad and wrong. But then government, which actually has, you know, the use of force behind it and can force you at gunpoint with the threat of imprisonment or death to do their bidding, government is viewed as altruistic. It's so backwards to me, I'll never understand that one core fundamental difference in worldview.
And here's more from Booker, kind of along the same lines of what you were just talking about, Drew.
They should absolutely be held criminally liable because they are liable and responsible. This is one of the reasons why, well before I was running for president, I said I would not take contributions from pharma companies, not take contributions from corporate PACs.
When are we going to hold government criminally liable for some of the things they do?
Or people personally responsible as well. It's not as simple as that. And that's the problem, too, with all of this. They paint with such broad brushes. It's not that simple, especially when you're talking about the opioid crisis. That's okay, though. Julian Castro, made it perfectly clear that the Democrats have nothing to worry about.
On January 20th, 2021, we'll say adios to Donald Trump.
Okay. That's going to age poorly.
Happy birthday to this future president.
former Maryland Congressman John Delaney.
Ooh. Right?
Yeah. Talking about House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and impeachment.
I don't think anyone is above the law, including a president. I support Speaker Pelosi's decisions that she's making in the House of Representatives right now as Speaker. I think she knows more about the decision as to whether to impeach the president than any of the 2020 candidates combined.
There wasn't, there wasn't a lot of talk of Trump last night. They actually, I was kind of surprised when you look at overall the comments. I mean, sure, Trump is mentioned. There's no doubt about that. But it wasn't as big of a focus as I certainly would have anticipated last night. I mean, which is odd, too, because the beginning of the show, we played the clip of all of the candidates running through what the biggest geopolitical threat was. And I don't know who the Yahoo was that said it, but one person said Donald Trump, and it got the largest applause of the entire group, right. So I'm a little bit surprised that Trump wasn't more of the focus.
That was Jay Inslee that said that,
and I think it actually happens right at the beginning of the clip here.
Who is the geopolitical threat to the United States? Just give me a one word answer, Congressman Delaney.
Can you repeat the question?
Greatest geopolitical threat to the United States right now, Congressman Delaney.
Well, the biggest geopolitical challenge is China, but the biggest geopolitical threat remains nuclear weapons.
Okay.
Right? So those are different questions.
Totally get it. Go ahead, Governor Inslee.
The biggest threat to the security of the United States is Donald Trump, and there's no question. Okay.
Congresswoman Gabbard.
The roar of applause.
Yeah. That was really telling to me. I would not have. I mean, and again, it could have been without knowing the demographics of the crowd. And I think how you go to a debate like that and how you get the tickets, and I think all that matters,
sure,
and who makes up that crowd, I think speaks a lot to it. But I was genuinely surprised that the cheering was that. And that was the largest applause. Nobody, like China,
right.
You weren't getting interrupted. Yeah. China, yeah!
Even climate change, when somebody brought up climate change, it didn't get nearly as raucous applause.
Yeah, Jay Inslee is the governor of Washington.
Good for him.
Good for him.
The climate change one, to me, I anticipate the climate change, and I could be wrong, okay, but I anticipate the climate change narrative among the Democrats of being useful to them is going to fade. I never really understood, I could be wrong, I never understood the resurgence of global warming and climate change. I felt like that had really run its course. I was surprised when it ended up becoming such a focus leading in to these candidates making their announcement. And just based off of the smattering of applause and just the reaction to it, it seems like an eye roller to me.
I don't know. I hope you're right, and you certainly could be right, but when you look at, you know, the AOCs and how much focus that wing of the party places on climate change, I don't know, because it's one of their most high profile issues. Here's the thing about the climate change issue is it's a very easy and convenient means of control. You know, by saying we need to curb certain behaviors, you know, in order to preserve our client, they're able to pass laws, they're able to criminalize activity, basically, that is perfectly harmless. And it offers them a very effective means of control. And it's less about climate and more about the economy and more about transitioning us away from capitalism and more towards socialism and central planning.
Well, I know that it's a big issue among millennials. We see that quite often. And, you know, anecdotally speaking, I know Sam's constantly talking about all the millennials out at her farm. They're always talking about global warming and climate change. Right?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
That's just a big topic of mine over at Enchanted Hollows.
We care a lot about the trees and bugs and
exactly.
stuff.
A couple more clips. Elizabeth Warren made an interesting claim last night.
7 children will die today from gun violence, children and teenagers. And they won't just die in mass shootings. They'll die on sidewalks. They'll die in playgrounds. They'll die in people's backyards.
7 a day?
I don't know where she is getting that statistic.
I don't either.
I could be wrong. Again, I don't admit it, but that seems like if that stat were true, that would be like talked about a lot more.
People would lead with that.
It's I don't know. Maybe she's pulling an average.
I
don't know.
7 children a day.
That's the first time I
will die from gun violence.
Children, like
that.
not adults, right. Children and teens specifically.
One more, and this is when things got very spicy and very Spanish.
Necesitamos incluir cada persona en el éxito de esta economía. Pero si queremos hacer eso, necesitamos incluir cada persona en nuestra democracia. Cada votante necesitamos la representación y cada voz necesitamos escuchar.
Me llamo Julián Castro y estoy postulando por presidente de los Estados Unidos.
La situación
es
inaceptable.
Este presidente ha atacado, ha demonizado los inmigrantes. Es inaceptable. Voy a cambiar este.
Look what I can do.
¿Qué haría usted en el primer día,
señor
presidente,
is.
Sobre esta realidad que está ocurriendo? What would you do, Congressman, day one at the White House?
Vamos a tratar cada persona con el respeto y dignidad que merecen como humanos.
They're just trying to show off now.
Maybe I misread that whole thing, and God was a lot more involved last night, and they were all just speaking in tongues. I don't know.
Did you
maybe
leave
that
out,
was the case?
I know that was supposed to be like a compilation of all the candidates, you know, speaking foreign language. Did you leave out where Amy Klobuchar was speaking British?
I might have left that one out.
What if one of them like just started speaking German?
I know, right?
Or Russian. Can you imagine?
What a bizarre display.
Like I don't know. Because Beto O'Rourke started it all because he answered a question in English and then he answered it in Spanish. And then like everyone else kind of hopped on the bandwagon and tried to do the same thing.
Klobuchar was like, I can speak Canadian.
Hey, I like syrup. Stop. And I don't. That's Canadian, right? And
yes, that was a very, very fluent, very fluent Canadian you spoke right
maple
there.
Maple trees or something.
Maple Sorry. Trees or something.
Sorry. It was just dumb. It was just stupid.
651-989-5855. Curious to get your thoughts if you watched the debate last night. Also use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter. Coming up, we've got some local stories we want to touch on.
Yeah, we will. We'll get into the 2040 plan. Some new details emerged. The St. Louis Park City Council has decided to do away with the Pledge of Allegiance. We'll share some commentary about that. And some audio from the Free Beacon about how media and Dems have shifted from manufactured crisis, right? There's no crisis to it's a
5FM.
Segment of your Thursday edition of Justice and Drew is upon us. Tomorrow on the show, it's the Friday Roundtable. We're going to have Representative Nick Zerwas and comedian Corey Adam in for the roundtable. They will be your contestants on the Friday News Quiz as well, along with, of course, producer Sam Sansevier. If you want to make your picks as to who you think you might win, get them in a little early.
And we've got a smattering of stories perfect for the Friday Roundtable. First, we've got one. I think we may end up wiping out on. There's a list of the most American cars.
The most American cars.
Yeah, the cars that are the most American. Yeah.
Is the Dukes of Hazzard car number one?
And then with that, we recanceled that. We canceled the General Lee a long, long time ago.
Who's we?
Just collectively.
Did we?
Yeah, stupid people in society. Plus, we have a study. Twin Cities have some of the worst drivers in the country. Yeah, I can tell you that this morning on the drive-in. Somebody...
That statistic, clearly whoever did that statistic just watches me drive.
Somebody actually... I didn't talk about this yet. We've got to get to phone calls and other things. But this morning, I'm not kidding you. Somebody actually on the freeway, on the transition to 100 South, it's real tight, right? Somebody actually moved into the far... Into the shoulder to pass traffic.
Oh. What?
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, oh, I've never done that.
I'm not kidding you. I saw it from my rearview mirror, and I saw this car, and they were dodging in and out of traffic. I go, that guy's flying. I could just tell from my rearview mirror, and it's still dark outside. And I watched them. They went off onto the shoulder, passed about on the freeway, passed about three cars, and then got back on, and then dove all the way over to the fast lane and just took off down the road. I thought it was a cop.
Yeah, no, that
wow.
That's a move. I've seen that done before.
Incredible.
That infuriates me.
It was incredible
like,
to see.
You better have a woman in labor.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I can think of.
Even if she's in labor, like that baby better be halfway out if you're driving that fast.
And it was... it was.
You should not be driving on the shoulder. Come on.
It was some like faded maroon, like late 80s, early 90s Oldsmobile. Like, not that there's any justification at all, but if the dude was driving, like, a sports car or
like, a Tesla,
a rally car
if he was driving a Tesla, that would change your opinion?
It was just this piece of garbage
maybe it's somewhere important
no,
to be.
No, they didn't. They just thought that they were important.
I mean, you're driving to work at like, what, like 4:30 a.m.? Mm-hmm. Where could he possibly be going? Is that important?
It better be a hospital.
Yeah. Oh. It could have been.
All right. Let's play this for you. Free Beacon. Hosts on CNN, MSNBC, Joe Scarborough, Don Lemon, Chris Cuomo, Nicole Wallace, and others, right, along with Democrat talking points earlier this year that the administration, they all went along with it, had manufactured a crisis at the border to secure wall funding. This minute 40 clip, which you can watch the video on at the Justice and Drew page at TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. What you're going to hear in this audio clip are these hosts, and this is them back to back. This is them a few months ago, talking about how there was no crisis, this was manufactured, and this is them now talking about the complete opposite.
He's lied so much about the realities of what he's calling a crisis.
I have never seen a crisis since maybe when you were in New Orleans talking about Katrina. That was as openly understood and ignored.
Tonight, the president tries to sell a crisis that the facts tell us does not exist. This entire situation, which many have argued is a bona fide crisis at our southern border.
The big scam of the whole address was that there's a crisis. There's not a crisis. Those were the powerful words written to describe the humanitarian crisis at the border.
He's already been out lying about a crisis on the southern border. He's doing a much worse job than Barack Obama, and he's created this crisis.
And the word crisis is what this is all about for Team Trump. He's got to prove that there is one.
Move aside from the moment of the blame on why we are suddenly having this crisis right now.
Manufactured crisis. Yes, I said manufactured crisis.
It's a crisis. I'm going to drill down on some of the numbers from this humanitarian crisis.
There is no crisis at the border.
What do you say to the folks on the left who believe that this is not doing enough to deal with the crisis at the border and could help with the deportation? It's a good bill.
President Trump once again tried to claim there was a crisis at the border. The fact is, migrant border crossings have been declining for nearly two decades. But we have to grapple with the real challenges at the border and do more to reduce the number of migrants who feel they need to flee their countries in the first place.
President Trump, stop holding the American people hostage. What? Let's stop manufacturing a crisis.
We have never not said that there was a crisis. There is a humanitarian crisis at the border.
You just said there's no crisis.
Yeah.
I can't.
Yeah. You guys, you know, say you guys, Democrats, you guys have refused to do anything to help the situation down there, whether it be increased border security, whether it be physical barriers at certain parts, whether it be increasing the funding for the ICE facilities that are trying to process, not detain, process these people that are coming over. You've done nothing. And now the system is completely overwhelmed and overloaded, and you still refuse to do anything about it. We talked a couple days ago about how there was the bill that was introduced that had funding for these facilities that would have funded ICE and Border Patrol agents, would have gotten more manpower and personnel down there, and the Democrats refused to support it because it had a modicum of wall funding attached to it. And they are so scared of their base of going back and saying, yeah, we voted for some wall funding, but because, you know, what else was in it? Why did you vote for it? This happens all the time in government. It's horse trading. Yeah, we voted for some wall funding, but it had all of these other important things in it. Couldn't do that. Couldn't bring yourself to do that. Too cowardly to do that. And now here we are.
And they're so, they can't even craft a spin that's a lie to have it make sense. And what I mean is,
we've never said it.
Well, or just say this. Go, there wasn't a crisis. There is now because of Trump's policies between then and now. Right? I mean, at least craft a spin, even though it would still be a lie. But these individuals, these talking heads, they don't care. And this is what I find so incredibly frustrating, and this is very much has to do with what we do. It's very relative to what we do, right? And that is the fact that none of them bother to go and say it is a crisis now, or at least just admit that you said the complete opposite just months ago. They just are total They're totally fine with being complete and utter hypocrites. It doesn't matter. And I know for us, I desperately try not to be that way. If I make a mistake, if I say something contradictory, I try to explain the reason why I did that because we're all human. These guys aren't human. They don't care.
Or I think that like you guys and we as a show in general do a good job of when we're talking about an issue or maybe we might not have all of the details or anything like that, we kind of leave it open. We give our opinions on what we know, but we say, you know, like this could change. We could learn more. And you see people like Nancy Pelosi at the end of that clip. She was speaking, she speaks in total absolutes all the time where she's like, there is a crisis on the border. Or she'll, no, she says there isn't a crisis on the border. And then she'll come back one day and then she'll say that we've never said that there's a crisis on the border. And right. then it's a manufactured crisis on the border. And then it, she just goes back and forth and back and forth.
And when I say they're not human, it's because they're robots. Right, and they just all follow the same. They're not getting together. They're just all following the same talking points and just regurgitating what the other person is saying.
And it would be one thing if it were just Democrat elected officials and politicians that were regurgitating the same talking points. Like, I expect them to circulate talking sure. points and to circulate language and words when they're trying to advance a narrative and advance an agenda. I get that. But when you have members of the media doing the exact same thing, from different networks, on different shows, using the exact same phrasing and exact same words and describing things the exact same way that Democrat politicians are, what does that tell you? That's not natural. That doesn't just happen by coincidence. That tells you that these things are being distributed amongst each other and they're all getting agreed upon. And they're all saying, okay, you know, this week we're going to call it a manufactured crisis.
We are going to, on tomorrow's show, we'll get into more details on these, switching gears in the final minutes that we have. We have a bunch of stories here about what's been taking place in San Francisco, Seattle, Los Angeles. You got a story here. San Diego spending millions to build elaborate tent facility for homeless. This is the Republican mayor in San Diego signed off on an $11 million contract to fund bridge shelters for the homeless. We mentioned this briefly yesterday, and again, we'll get into more detail tomorrow. San Francisco, first major city to ban e-cigarettes. Story here highlighting why there are so many homeless in Los Angeles. The photographs of people that are pitching tents along the beaches. It's just disgusting. There's a story here, too. San Francisco homeless advocates have gone to war with a gay sushi restaurant because there's a rock in front of the restaurant that they feel like could go and be a place where homeless people could go and live.
Oh.
It's just, it's gotten insane.
What? This photo.
Yeah. Right? And so,
what?
You have all of this, and all of this is a direct result of liberal policies and liberal leadership, right? And we certainly haven't gotten to that place that's this bad here in Minneapolis and Minnesota yet. But you look at what some of the moves that are being made by some of our local leadership doing that thing with my fingers, and it is a slow march towards this type of thing happening right here.
And it's all, so much of it is pitting groups against each other. And eventually, and we're seeing it happen with the more woke left, with the, you know, in reference to the San Francisco story with the gay rock,
yeah,
in front of a sushi place.
I mean, I don't think the rock's gay.
Well, you don't know.
It's painted.
Sure, you're right. Yeah. I shouldn't assume.
You don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think it is.
And when you pit all these groups against each other, eventually, you know, everybody's going to start fighting each other and fighting their own. And it's so sad because it's completely and utterly unnecessary.
I don't want to take away from your excellent point, Drew, but what is a gay sushi restaurant?
Well, everybody in the restaurant is gay.
Can you only eat there if you're gay?
No. It's just all the workers in the restaurant apparently.
Are you eating gay fish?
So I don't know.
So that when they're hiring people, are they?
I can't believe how serious I took that question.
I'm like, I really did.
You can't.
I don't know.
You can't assume the sexuality of the little fishies.
I don't know. True. I don't know the gender roles of aquatic animals.
I'm sorry.
Fish.
I'm still stuck on this gay restaurant thing. So when they're hiring people. I'm sorry, just bear with me. When they're hiring people, is it a requirement to be gay? Because
no,
then they're discriminating.
No, it just says in here, the sushi restaurant is in a famously gay neighborhood.
Okay.
And most of the people that work there are gay.
Are they? Okay.
Okay, so we are going to talk more about this on tomorrow's show. We got to sneak in two things because we're running out of time here. Real quick.
The headline calling it a gay sushi restaurant just seems a little offensive.
I know. I cannot give you a hard time because you're doing what I do all the time. So
asking questions?
Exactly.
I'm just gonna assume the sushi's gay.
You know what?
I'm with the Rock.
Yeah, yeah, the Rock's gay. Well, the sushi's gay. Yeah. The fish are gay. The rice in the sushi's gay.
On tomorrow's show, we will get into these other stories because we're running out of time here. St. Louis Park will no longer say the Pledge of Allegiance at city council meetings. The council, sorry, council unanimously voted to drop the pledge because of concerns that it intimidated the city's diverse population. And again, we'll get into all of the different comments from the city council members on tomorrow's show. It's utterly ridiculous.
It's frustrating. It's really frustrating. It's like, Does saying the Pledge of Allegiance or not saying the Pledge of Allegiance make a huge difference in the grand scheme of things? No, it doesn't. But it symbolizes a really frustrating and disappointing mindset of those in charge.
Yeah. Yeah. They're not leaders.
We should be ashamed of being America. We should not talk about being patriotic and loving this country. And, you know, what is wrong with this is the most amazing country on the planet. People flock here from all over the world because of the opportunities that this country provides.
If we were as bad as everyone says we are, people wouldn't be trying to cross our border and come here.
If you come here and you live here and you're intimidated by the Pledge of Allegiance,
that's what you're taking
offense
by.
Just leave, man.
Just leave. Or just don't say it, I guess.
Right, you don't have to.
Yeah, you don't have to.
And it doesn't matter if you were born here. It doesn't matter if you immigrated here legally. And honestly, if you're here illegally, you obviously came here illegally for a reason. Right? Because it's pretty cool.
Yeah. I'm not going to go risk my life to go someplace worse.
Yeah, I know. But that's how all those
trying to illegally immigrate to North Korea.
Like, I'm right. Like, nobody's trying to illegally immigrate to Venezuela.
You know, but that's how all those Democrats up on stage, you know, last night would lead you to believe. They would lead you to believe that they immigrated here because it's worse. All that I know is
you're fascinating to talk to.
You really are.
You really, really are. Oh, I'm just happy she's out of the news.
We'll get to this 2040 plan on tomorrow's show because there's a lot of tomfoolery in that we can share with the roundtable.
The roundtable consisting of Representative Nick Zerwas, comedian Corey Adam, and of course producer Sam Sansevier. They will be competing in the news quiz at 8:35 tomorrow. Should be a fun show. Have a great day, everybody. We're back tomorrow, 6 to 9. I don't want nobody.